Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Broadway Podcast Network presents Giants in the Sky, How Sondheim and Lapine Went into the Woods, with me, Ben Rimmelauer. Today's guest, Jackie Dankworth, Cinderella in the original London cast, and Cleo Lane's daughter.
Once upon a time,
Jackie Dankworth created the role of Cinderella in Richard Jones's original West End production of Into the Woods in 1991, after having watched her mother, jazz and stage legend Cleo Lane, star as the witch on the U.S. national tour. Jackie also played Beth in the 1992 Leicester Haymarket production of Stephen Sondheim and George Firth's Merrily We Roll Along, available on J Records, for whom she also recorded Godspell, Cabaret, and the title role in Sweet Charity. In addition to following in the footsteps of her parents, enjoying a thriving career on record and on stage as a jazz singer, Jackie has enjoyed success as an actor with the Royal Shakespeare Company, the National Theatre, and multiple times both on and off London's West End, as well as on Showtime's The Borgias. She was appointed Member of the Order of the British Empire, MBE.
I'm so thrilled to talk to you. Actually, it's such funny timing that I heard back from you because I just got on eBay my souvenir program from the woods that you were
seeing. Is that a coincidence? Is it?
Yeah.
Is that just a coincidence? That's so weird.
I mean, I had, because I think it's a while ago that I reached out through your mother's website, and then I started just like stabbing in the dark because I didn't have. You know, but then all of a sudden there you were in my inbox, and it's wonderful. I realized how closely timed it all was for you. When I got your email that you said that you had seen your mother, Cleo Lane, the great Cleo Lane, as the witch in the National Company in the United States, they opened in the summer of 89. And it was a year later, you were cast as Cinderella in the original West End production.
Yeah.
So it was a very Into the Woods time for you, it sounds like.
It was. And funnily enough, because Mum and Dad used to have an apartment in New York. So we often used to come over, you know, to be with Mum and Dad when they were touring, working there. And so I heard about Into the Woods, and I went on my own, actually. I think I went on my own, and I was just totally entranced by it. And I thought to myself, I want to be in that show. and it was Joanna Gleason as well. She was just, the whole thing was just so, so brilliant and so moving. And so I remember practicing sort of 8 hours a day. Thought that I wanted to play a baker's wife. And I learned all those songs, and they said, well, you're not right for her, but you know we'd like you to do Cinderella. So it kind of worked, and I was happy. I didn't care. I just wanted to be in the show. I'd have done anything in it. That was Richard Jones' production. That was, you know, that was we were fated by the, was it the Iraq War? I think it was the Iraq War.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of Americans stopped coming over at that time, and the show just folded after 6 months. But it was very, very different to the American
production. Especially in design. So talk to me about getting to see your mom in the tour. Where did you go see like the first run through that they did in New York before going on the road, or where did you see it?
I wish I'd thought about that. I can't remember where it was. I think it was possibly in somewhere like Palm. I think it was Palm Springs or something.
Oh, yeah. Palm Beach in Florida. Were they open at the very beginning?
Yeah, that's where I went, because I remember walking with mum on the beach there. So that's where it was. And she was brilliant. She was very funny and, you know, just, I mean, very different. But she was just mum doing the way. I mean, she was, you know, she was, it kind of suited her, because I always think of her as a witch, actually, in the nicest possible way.
Yes, magical, a sorceress.
She is a sorceress, very powerful woman.
I mean, this was a period of a lot of theater work for her, because this was pretty much right after she had done Mystery of Edwin Drood on Broadway. Yeah. And also around the time when her Sondheim album came out. And did this, was this, I mean, I know she had done theater over the years and stuff, but was there an intent to make that more of a focus at this phase in her career?
I mean, I don't know. I know she played, she was in Little Night Music as well around that time.
Yeah.
So I think it must have been. I think it was hard on her and Dad, because it meant that they were separated quite a lot. But I think one of the regrets for Mum was not getting into the movies, you know, getting into Hollywood. And I think theatre was very dear to her heart, because she, of course, she played Julie in Showboat in the West End.
Yes. And
that was, I understand that that's what launched her in America, because
yeah,
someone heard her singing that, and that's was the beginning of her career in America, I believe. Yeah. I read that somewhere. But I don't know if that was, you know, I know that, because throughout her career, she's always done a lot of acting. So I guess maybe it was just synchronicity that a lot of things came along. I guess I'm sure the tone, you know, the, did she win the Tony Award? Did she win a Tony Award for that?
No,
she was nominated, was she?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that sort of spurred her on to do more.
Yeah.
It was so successful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And people loved her on that album.
Yeah.
I mean, well, the cast, I've talked to, they haven't released the episodes yet, but I've had conversations with some of the members of the National Company, and they all idolized her so much and talk about her standing in the wings and watching her sing,
yeah,
and how hilarious and warm she was. And even though she was the star of the company, that she was such a salt of the earth.
Yeah.
That made them all feel comfortable, even though they were in awe of her. And Jonathan Hadley was saying that she was always so pissed about The Last Midnight, because she felt it didn't have an ending. And that one time she would sing the song and she would really have them. And then it has this, you know, kind of, you know, I mean, I guess Bernadette Peters had done it kind of just like a shriek at the end, but of course, you know, what, 4-octave range or whatever. So she sang this, you know, stratospheric notes, but it still wasn't, it didn't have, I guess, what she considered
a showbiz ending. Yeah.
So she would storm off in frustration. And he said one time that she passed him off stage, and she said, "It's like having the most wonderful, fabulous sex for hours and no orgasm."
Is that what Mom said?
Yes.
I'm blocking my ears. I'm blocking my ears. You don't like to think about that, about your mum.
No, no. Well, only in art. No, only in art.
No, it's great. I'm only kidding. But well, that was a brilliant description of it. No, she was, the thing about Mum was she was so relaxed. I think she had such confidence in her own ability, and I think she's almost zen-like. I mean, she's still like, she's 96 now, and you know, very, very, very frail, but still so loved by everyone who looks after her. And so she's got this kind of zen-like quality, which I definitely haven't inherited, where she's just very calm. And I can tell you a story. We were on the road with Mum and Dad, and we'd stopped. We were driving in convoy with the rest of the, you know, with the rest of the musicians and the road manager. And my dad was at the beginning, the head of the convoy, because my dad loved to drive, and so he prided himself in having the map, you know, and driving.
Yeah.
So they pull over on the hard shoulder, and because he's got lost on the map. So he pulls over, gets out of his car to speak to his road manager behind, Elliot, and he forgot that he was in an automatic car, so he'd left it in drive. So my mum's reading the newspaper in the front on the left. My brother and I are in the back, and my brother screams, "The car's moving, the car's moving." So my mum carries on reading the newspaper, doesn't look up, says, "Go tell your father." So that's how relaxed she is. So then, I wind the window and I go, Dad, the car's moving. And I see my dad in the distance running, you know, a mile. And this car was heading towards a ditch. And so I sort of jump over to the front and steer the car away from the ditch. And my mum just carries on reading. But that kind of sums her up in a way, which is why I'm telling you about it.
Well, it must have served her well. I mean, because God knows one aspect of show business alone, if you only focus on theater or you only focus on jazz or you only focus on pop music or you only focus on, you know, running a venue. I mean, any one of those things could be a lot of strife, you know, and to be able to navigate all of that as a woman of color, around all over the world. I mean, she must have had to put up with so much in her way.
Yeah. I mean, she was born in 1927. Mum's going to tell me off. I've told you her age now anyway, so, but she'll tell me off about that as well. But she was born in 1927 and into a mixed race family in 1927. Can you imagine? Wow. And so my uncle, her brother, said to me that, if there were any racist comments, it was Cleo, well, she was called Clementina at that time, Clemmy, they called her Clemmy. It was Clemmy that used to go and beat everyone up. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm telling you the truth, it was her. She, if anyone gave them jip, she would just, you know, get her sort of metaphorical boxing gloves on. And so she was tough, you know, she was brought up tough. But she had that spirit as well, so... Yeah, she still has, actually. We have competition still to see who can sing the highest.
she still got the high notes. Wow. That should be the first to go, usually. That's incredible.
No, she could still do it. And so and my husband, Charlie Wood, is a fine jazz musician. And he comes over and plays music. We play all her repertoire. Well, not all, but we have some special songs like Sunny Side of the Street, we always do. I've Got a Crush on You. Tea for Two, that's another one. And then from time to time, I have a competition with her to see who can sing highest. And she always wins still. She's got this freak instrument that can just, now even, you know, when she's not singing, she can just, So there you go.
Amazing.
Yeah.
You saw the show on Broadway and then you got to see your mom do it. But then obviously your true deep study of the piece came when you got cast as Cinderella. And I mean, I would love to do a whole second season of the podcast on that production and everything about it. But I am curious, particularly in the role of the witch and seeing that evolve with the focus on your mother, but even in any aspect, you know, what were sort of the things that struck you working on that, either how it changed your appreciation of the material or what you noticed about the different approach, you know?
Richard Jones was very strict about not allowing any influence from Sondheim in the rehearsal room because I think with Sunday in the Park with George had been, you know, I think the director, Stephen was in the rehearsals and I think it caused, you know, lots of confusion from a lot of the actors. And and so Richard Jones sort of made a decision. But of course, Julie McKenzie, who played the witch, was very, very close to Stephen. So she used to tell us she was on the phone to him every night to tell him what was going on? Oh dear. So he was kind of still involved, but I remember backstage during the dress rehearsals, Stephen was there I believe with James Lapine, it was James Lapine was there, and there's a scene where Cinderella, the ugly sisters are you know, tearing her hair and look at her clothes, look at her, you know, I can't remember the words now, but look at her hair, look at her, and I've been directed by Richard Jones to do it in a certain way, and Stephen and James Lapine called us over in I think we were in the bar, you know, at the Phoenix, and said, no, you shouldn't do it that way. This is how you're going to get the laugh. You know, this is, you know. So we did it a different way. And during the dress rehearsal, and Richard Jones says, why are you doing it like that? And of course, then we're in this terrible position. We didn't know what to say. And we all went, but so, you know, I think he was right. I have to say, I think he was right that he got that. That was where the laugh was, or the tension, or, so, but that was all going on. I don't know. Imelda Staunton played the baker's wife, and I mean, she was absolutely brilliant in it. But I know that she was asked loads of times to play the baker's wife. I'm sure I'm not speaking out of turn, because it's, but and she kept saying no, I can't do it, no. And then finally, she was persuaded to play. And then, of course, then she went on to play Rose help me out.
Gypsy.
Yeah. So that was the beginning of her relationship with Stephen Sondheim. Yeah. I knew him through Merrily We Roll Along as well.
Sure. You were Beth at the Leicester.
So I got to know him quite well. For me, it was very high for me. I had never sung that high, so I was really surprised that they cast me.
Yeah.
So I tried to get lots of tips from Mum, you know. Sing through your nose, pretend you're a cat. You know, meow, and all sorts. So I was doing My Fair Lady in Cheltenham, and I was, the landlady could hear all these cat noises coming out from the room. I think she thought I'd gone bonkers.
Do you mean to tell me that Cinderella is a higher role than Eliza Doolittle?
No, it's about the same, actually. It is about the same, but it's not my natural voice. But yeah, so I was surprised I was cast in that as well. So I had to learn to sing high. And when I listen to Into the Woods now, and I listen to myself, it's like a different person singing.
But I hear your mother in your voice, and it's funny. I almost hear it more there in that soprano stuff than I do in like your jazz recordings or like even that album you made of Sweet Charity. Which is so great, and you're such a wonderful charity. But I think you sound more like Cleo as Cinderella than
going up. Really? Oh, how interesting.
Maybe that's just my weird ear, but
maybe it's just the high, the vibrato or something on the high notes. But
and what was the
difference? It was a wonderful production. It was very, very different. And I think Richard Jones wanted to strip. He wanted a different kind of fairy tale. Is it the Grimm's fairy tale? You know, that where it's kind of really quite harsh. And my mum came to see it, and she said she really missed. She preferred the American.
Well,
there you go. I shouldn't say that, should I? I think she loved the beauty of it. I think because it was utterly beautiful. It was like a pop-up fairy. It was like one of those beautiful pop-up books, wasn't it?
Yeah.
With the glitter and the trees and the lighting, and oh my God. And Richard Jones went for a very stark, we were all lit from underneath, spotlights from underneath, which wasn't very flattering either, you know, that spotlight underneath. But I mean, it's difficult when you're in a production, but I believe it was a brilliant production. Certainly Imelda was wonderful in it. Julia McKenzie said she struggled with the witch. I don't know why, but she said she found it a really difficult part. I don't know. Maybe she didn't feel like she was glamorous enough or something. I don't know, because you know, you've got to turn into this glamorous person, a glamorous witch, haven't you? So
it is a departure to cast her. I mean, you know, because your mother is a glamorous figure, Bernadette Peters, and and that was a different take, and also just certainly vocally. I mean, I think of Julia as this sort of more, you know, soprano kind of. Maybe soprano is not always the case, because I guess she plays lower Tessa Torres, but not the kind of jazz belt, you know,
no.
You know, that
very classically trained.
Yeah, very
praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater. SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
Do you know, she was so kind to me, Julie McKenzie, because you won't believe this, but I lost my dog during Into the Woods when I was playing Cinderella, and she was stolen. My dog was stolen.
Oh wow!
And I believe it happened in the woods, right near where my parents live in Milton Keynes, and I'd been staying there. And my mom and dad had a housekeeper and they were looking after my dog and they let it out in the morning and it ran off. But there are these massive woods, right? So every night after the show of Into the Woods, I would drive into the woods with friends calling, Nelson. And so it was so weird and very upsetting. And Julie McKenzie is a mad dog person. She's got about, you know, she had about four or five dogs at the time. And she said, use my dressing room anytime, just come down. So I was sitting in her dressing room whenever I wasn't on stage. I was bringing Battersea dogs home and all these dogs homes, ticking them off lists. And strange, isn't it? What you?
Yeah.
It was so weird going into the woods after the show.
Yeah.
It was creepy as well.
Yeah. Yeah, wow. Be careful of the wolf. Did you ever see any of the other productions later on, like the one in Regent's Park or the film?
I'm pretty sure I think I saw Sophie Thompson at the Donmar Warehouse.
Oh, right. Sure. Yeah, there was that. Yeah. Was that Bob Crowley?
Production?
Yeah.
I saw that, but that was I guess they call that an off. The equivalent of an off-Broadway venue, do they?
Yeah.
On my warehouse, I don't know. But I didn't see Regent's Park. Stupidly, I should have gone.
Well, I think they actually filmed it, so you still can.
Oh yeah.
But
is it good?
You know, I haven't watched the. I can't believe I'm saying it on the thing. Maybe I'll edit it out. But I haven't watched that film. But I saw that production when they did it in Central Park in New York with an American cast, with the same.
Yeah.
What do you call it? Steampunk style. So it was very cool. We also had a really interesting production by a company called the Fiasco Theater Company, where it was a very small cast with a lot of doubling, like a lot of doubling, you know, across genders, and only sort of found objects as set and costume and props pieces. Like the stepsisters wore Levalore blinds that were their ball gowns. I mean, it was all like as if it was very much like, you know, what kids could put a show on.
Oh, okay.
From like a broom closet.
Idea,
it was very cool. Yep. So it's interesting when I hear you talk about like your mom's reaction or people's reaction to Richard Jones' production, because I think the piece supports, you know, having all these different interpretations, you know, and especially because James Lapine directed the original and the revival.
Yeah.
Certainly got the original imprimatur preserved for all time. So, I mean, we can, you know, I like seeing the alternate takes. Yeah.
Yeah. I saw Company, because when I did My Fair Lady, John Doyle was directing and
Oh, wonderful.
He then he then had this huge, he's had this huge success in America. Yeah. And I watched his production of Company during COVID. And I just couldn't believe it. I just thought it was absolutely brilliant.
Yeah.
Like, you know, all the double, the actor musicians, they're just unbelievable.
Was that not how his My Fair Lady that you were in was staged?
No, it was very, very traditional. Yeah.
You could do a production like that. I mean, you're a musician. You could step into one of those if you should, you know. Would you still have interest in doing musical theater?
Who's that? So,
Do you still have interest in that?
Do I still have it? Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. I did grade 8 flute. I'm quite a good flautist, actually. So I could play the flute, something like that.
We should get you back together with John Doyle. I mean, that's...
I'd love to. Do you know him?
I don't, but maybe he'll hear the podcast. We can get
you never know. John, if you're out there, get in touch.
He did, because it was Company and Sweeney Todd. And he did a few other things. Well, he's directed a lot. But, I mean, he did a few in that interesting style that is, you know...
Yeah.
Looking at the photos in the souvenir program from your Into the Woods... I was thinking about that style of theater also that's very, I guess, Brechtian or something, because like I noticed that the Milky White had wheels, very prominent wheels.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like the suspension of disbelief is proactive.
Yes, it's exactly what he wanted. And Patsy Rowland played Jack's mother.
Oh, yeah.
She was so funny and lovely. I think she's not with us anymore.
No.
I can't believe it. I'm trying to think.
And Ian Bartholomew was the
he's creator. Wonderful.
Yeah.
That was good cast. I mean, interesting casting. And Eunice Gayson played my mother. My stepmother.
Yeah.
No, not the stepmother. No, my
actual. Oh, pardon me. In the tree. Excuse me.
Yeah, the tree. And she used to be a Bond. She was one of the Bond ladies, the original Bond, James Bond ladies.
Oh,
and so she used to arrive to stage door every day, looking so glamorous, you know, because she was a Bond lady. Right up, you know, she was just. She used to say, "Jackie, you should really up your game. You know, you should look glamorous when you come to the stage door." And she's right, really. I used to just arrive in my jeans and messy hair and everything, but that old, she was one from the old guard, you know.
Yeah, it's a generational thing. I think maybe the young generation now, with their social media and everything, it's in a way it's kind of swung back to the old guard style, because they're very plugged in to appearing for the fans and, you know, working maybe sometimes in lieu of the actual work, right. You know. Yes. But that does seem to have picked up.
The pressure of, you know, getting your eyebrows right and your false eyelashes and all that rubbish. But, you know, my mum used to say to me as a kid, "Jackie, it's 90% how you look." And I was like, "No, it isn't. It's about the art," you know, and I was really offended by it. But actually, do you know what? I wonder if she's right now. oh, God.
Well, she's a beautiful woman, so she can afford really to do that. That's hilarious. 90%. Yeah. was there ever things that she said to you? I mean, I loved hearing that comment about the comparing the productions. Over the years, did she reflect on Into the Woods in a certain way ever?
No, I mean, you know, we sang it as a duet. We did it, Mum and I did it as a duet on one of her records, No One Is Alone.
Oh,
we,
lovely.
We did it, and we did it often. Like at Christmas, if I joined her on stage, we'd often do that. And in fact, I just did a one woman show at Edinburgh, and I sang No One Is Alone. You know?
Oh, wonderful! Yeah. What a wonderful tribute. Yeah. That you created that song on the West End. I mean, you know, you were generous to let your mother join you for it.
Yeah, hands up. I remember once during a Christmas. Oh, I can't tell you this. No, it's too.
Oh, please.
No, she just didn't want. No, it's a bit too personal, but she just didn't want to share the microphone with anyone else, especially her daughter. So I laugh about it now, but then it was, but Yeah, that so that song is very special to me, really, because it's very poignant singing that with your own mum.
Oh, I can only imagine. I mean, it's funny because it's a show that even just to audience members seeing it once, it has such tremendous resonance, as particularly in the parents and children dynamics.
Yeah.
To not only have created the role on the West End, but to have shared this bond through the show over two different productions with your own brother is, it must be such a deep personal connection for you to this material.
I guess it is, although, it's probably a fault of mine. I perhaps don't appreciate these things as much as I should. And I didn't appreciate my dad so much until after he'd gone. And I said to Mum, I wish I'd listened to him more, but he was dad. And I think you sort of take for granted, all these things, but actually it is an amazing thing to sing that song with your mum and to have that show really has affected both of us in different ways. But Stephen Sondheim had, a huge impact on my early career, really.
Yeah.
So he was an important person in both our lives.
Yeah. Yeah.
Quite honored, really, to have known him, and very honored to have known him and have worked with him. And I really, really liked him, and I liked his detail of the work, it was all about the work, and it wasn't personal or anything. He just wanted it to be the best,
Yeah.
It was lovely. So I'm very lucky. And my mum's very lucky as well. We're lucky. We're both lucky.
Well, we were all lucky to have you both delivering that music. I mean, because it wouldn't have been the same in another voice. So it was written in the stars.
I guess some of these things are. You often feel that they are, don't you?
Yeah. Yeah.
Strange things happen. A bit like your pamphlet arriving today from eBay.
I knew that I was getting it soon, and I thought, oh well, too bad. I'll have it afterwards, But I got to look at it first,
Yeah, yeah. To study all the pictures and
I mean, and that's part of the reason that I'm doing the podcast, honestly, is because of the timing of this show that's been so influential to, I mean, for the younger generation, they really consider this the premier Stephen Sondheim musical. I mean, I remember growing up, I loved Into the Woods, but all the artists that I was assisting starting out my career sort of looked at it as kind of second tier after Follies or Sweeney Todd or whatever.
Really?
But to the kids, I mean, this is the number one Sondheim show, but it's right before the internet. And so none of this stuff is it's not easily sort of
accessible
cross-reference and everything, and so I wanted to get all the stories in, because unfortunately Sondheim's not with us anymore, but even getting to talk to Chip Zion and James Lapine and Joanna Gleason, I mean, they're still very agile and with it, that's not going to be the case 40 years from now.
No, absolutely. It's a wonderful thing that you do. Yeah. I listened to the Joanna Gleason one this morning, and she sounds really lovely. I love that audition story about, have you got anything fast? And she sang, was it on a clear day?
Yeah. I what did I have that I don't have? And she said, well, I can sing it much faster.
But she got the job, so she's very charming, isn't she?
Yeah. Everyone has been. It's been so fascinating. And and like I said, all the people from the national company, I mean, they all just sang such praises of working with your mother. And unfortunately we don't have an album from that, although I have gotten my hands on some soundboard recordings if you ever want those.
Have you? Of mom singing?
Yeah. Oh, wow. And also I found some clips on YouTube, which were wonderful to see.
Oh, okay.
Get a little taste of what she was like, and
the rap song and everything.
The rap I only have on the audio, but on YouTube there's The Last Midnight and Me and Lament, and you know, and they're as incredible as you would or to have been, you know.
Yeah. Well, she was very good at tapping into her own power, you know, and I think that part needs that.
Mm-hmm.
But also very funny and characterful, so she's perfect for it, really.
Yeah.
I'd love to do it one day. One day I'll do it.
Yeah. Call John Doyle. Let's make it happen.
Okay. History. You're on.
I love it. Well, I'm so thankful for you chatting with me. It's so great to get your perspective on this. I mean, it's truly one.
I hope I've been helpful. I'm not, you know, I it was a long time ago that I saw Mum in it. And obviously I just thought she was brilliant.
Yeah.
The production was very, very good. I was a little bit, because I saw the Broadway production, I think I was a little bit influenced by just the first thing that I saw. So I remember my mum very well in that touring production, but I don't remember everyone else, which is, I feel very embarrassed to say that. I probably shouldn't say that, should I?
No, listen, it's all, we're all warts and all. I mean, fun fact of family circularity, the man who played Cinderella's father on that tour is the father of Kim Crosby, who played Cinderella on Broadway. So they were all, it's like a family show, I guess. I hadn't known that until the podcast.
Do you mean the father of the baker? Do you mean that, you know, the
no Cinderella's father, you know, that small part that kind of ignores her.
Do you know, I've got absolutely, isn't that awful? I don't
Do you think that he was doesn't do much. He barely does anything. I'll tell you who it was.
Ah.
Let's see. Where's the cast?
I don't remember that in the London production.
And wouldn't that be funny if it was John Rogan?
Yeah, John Rogan.
Double cast with the mysterious man. That's interesting. But not the narrator. Oh, yeah. It was a different.
Yeah, he doubled as. Yeah.
That's funny.
How bizarre. I wonder if they cut that. Because I don't have any recollection of him being my father in that, but he was the mysterious man. He's meant to be the baker's father?
Yeah, the big mysterious man is.
Yeah, absolutely. Mysterious man. That I love that part. I think those songs are so beautiful, aren't they?
Totally. That's maybe one of my favorite songs in the show. Is that No More, that the baker sings with the mysterious man.
Yeah, I love that song.
And actually, in doing the research on this podcast, one thing I've come across is some of the soundboard recordings from the San Diego production before Broadway, of the early incarnation of the show, from 1986. And there was more to that song. The Mysterious Man had an extra, I don't know if it would be like a bridge or something, that was really lovely. I don't know why they cut it. I guess they had to.
Oh, it's a shame.
Getting long at that point in the show. You can't cherish your darlings. But
well, they wrote an extra song for Julia McKenzie.
Yes, I love that duet, Our Little World.
Yeah. Is that in productions post? Is that still kept in the show?
Well, we used it when I did it in college, but I think it's an option when people license the show. But we're so happy and love to have that on the London cast recording that was preserved. People should all check out if they haven't heard Jackie Dankworth as Cinderella in the original. Right. Into the Woods.
And it's another lifetime. It's a lifetime ago. Yeah. Gosh, how old would I have been when I did that? When was it? What was the?
It was 1990.
Right. Yeah. I'd be just heading for 30, I think.
Yeah. So you were really too young for The Baker's Wife.
Yeah.
Certainly younger than Imelda.
I'll be all right now, though, for it.
That's right.
I'm too old now because I'm too old now, but I'd be all right for The Witch.
Yeah, oh, definitely.
The witch is timeless.
I want to see it.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening to Giants in the Sky, How Sondheim and Lapine Went into the Woods on the Broadway Podcast Network. Look out for episode 42 with Marsha Milgram Dodge, auditioned choreographer.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.